Back to School Survey continues the unique effort of the National Center on Addiction and Substance Abuse at Columbia University, CASA, to track the attitudes of teens and those who, like parents, influence them. We seek to identify factors that increase or decrease the likelihood of teen substance abuse. Armed with this knowledge, we believe that parents, teachers, clergy, coaches, and other responsible adults can help our nation's teens grow up drug-free. We regard this as a work in progress as we try each year to improve our ability to identify those situations and characteristics that increase or diminish the risk that a teen will smoke, drink, get drunk, use illegal drugs, or abuse prescription drugs. Now, we do this not by questions that ask whether the teen uses these substances. A number of government surveys conduct such studies of substance abuse. Rather, the CASA survey asks such questions as, how many of the teen's friends smoke, drink, or use illegal drugs? Or at what percentage of the parties the teen goes to are illegal drugs used? Or how easy or fast is it for the teen to buy marijuana or alcohol? This year's survey of parents and teens focused on ways in which parental actions and inactions influence the risk that their children, their 12 to 17-year-old children, will abuse substances. The results indicate that although virtually all mothers and fathers are concerned about the challenges of raising kids in today's world, many do not realize how certain of their actions affect the likelihood that their children may smoke, drink, or use drugs. Many parents are doing a good job in raising their children. However, this year's survey has identified problem parents who enable, some even encourage, their 12 to 17-year-olds to use tobacco, alcohol, and illegal and prescription drugs. By their actions and their inactions, by failing to become part of the solution, these parents become part of the problem of teen, alcohol, and drug abuse in our nation. We know from years of research at CASA that teens whose parents are hands-on, engaged in their teens' day-to-day lives, relaxing with them, having frequent family dinners, supervising them, establishing standards of conduct, going to religious services with them, and setting positive examples of healthy behavior. These teens of these parents are much less likely to smoke, drink, and use drugs. This year's survey identified as problem parents those who increase the likelihood of substance abuse by their 12 to 17-year-olds because they fail to monitor their children's leaving their home and hanging out on school nights, Monday to Thursday. They fail to safeguard from their children their dangerous and addictive prescription drugs like painkillers and stimulants. They fail to address the problem of drugs in their children's school, and they fail to set good examples. You know, not knowing where your kid is and what your kid is up to at 10 p.m. is a risky business on a school night. Why? Because the later teens are hanging out with friends on school nights, the likelier that drug and alcohol use will be going on among them. Half of teens that come home after 10 p.m. on school nights say that's the case, as do almost a third of teens who come home between 8 and 10 p.m. Many problem parents become passive pushers by leaving abusable and addictive prescription drugs like their painkillers, Oxycontin and Vicodin, around the house, making them easily available for their children. Home appears to be the largest single source for prescription drugs that kids want to abuse. And while almost all parents say it's important that their schools, their children's attend, be drug-free, almost half of parents say their children are in schools where drugs are used, kept, and sold. And only 39% of those parents believe the goal of making the school drug-free is realistic. Not surprisingly, in view of those parental attitudes, one in five middle schoolers and almost two-thirds of high schoolers attend schools where drugs are used, kept, and sold. And research, ours and others, consistently demonstrates that the presence of drugs greatly increases the risk that kids in those schools will smoke, drink, get drunk, and use marijuana. These pessimistic problem parents should not accept drug-infected schools as an inevitable part of their children's school experience, any more than they would tolerate asbestos-infested schools as an acceptable risk for their children. We found that a quarter of teens know a parent of a classmate or friend who uses marijuana. 10% of 12 to 17-year-olds say this parent smokes marijuana with kids that teen's age. The most irresponsible problem parents are those who set a bad example by smoking marijuana, and those parents who smoke marijuana with their own or other 12 to 17-year-old children should be considered child abusers. This year's survey finds marijuana more available than ever, with a 35% increase over last year in teens who can get marijuana in an hour or less, and a 14% increase over last year in teens who can get marijuana in a day or less. From 2007 to 2008, in just 1 year, this represents an increase of 1.4 million teens who can buy marijuana in an hour or less, and of 1.1 million who can buy marijuana in a day or less. And think about this. In the same year, there was a decrease of almost 500,000 in the population of 12 to 17-year-olds. Preventing substance abuse among teens is primarily a mom-and-pop operation. Every mother and father should look in the mirror and ask themselves, am I doing the parenting essential to help my child negotiate the difficult teen years free of tobacco, alcohol, and drugs? Compared to the time when they were growing up, almost 9 of 10 parents surveyed said in these days it's harder to keep teenagers safe, and 3 of 4 parents said it's harder to raise a teen of good moral character. Against this realization, it is inexcusable that there are so many problem parents who either don't appreciate the impact of their actions on their children's vulnerability to substance abuse, or who don't try harder. When parents are not part of the problem, they're part of the problem. All parents should monitor their children on school nights, keep dangerous prescription drugs out of their kids' reach, and demand that their children's schools become drug-free. And all parents should set a good example, because what they do will have a far greater influence on their kids than what they say. By identifying the characteristics of problem parents, we seek to identify actions that parents can take and avoid in order to raise healthy, drug-free kids and become part of the solution to the nation's serious substance abuse problem. Elizabeth Planette, who will be seated here in the front row. Yes, she is. Okay. Is the director of special projects. She manages complex undertaking. And next to her, Steve Wagner. Behind her, Steve Wagner, the president of QEV Analytics, did the insightful work in analyzing the data. And we much appreciate the assistance of our survey advisory group, which I'll mention when we get to the slides. Let me go through the slides, and then I'll be happy to take your questions. This is our 13th annual survey. We have an advisory group that we have review it to make sure we're using the best methodology and techniques. You can see they are a distinguished trio of experts in this field. This year we surveyed about 1,000 teens, half boys and half girls, and we surveyed 312 parents of those teens. All the parents surveyed were parents of the teens we surveyed. Raising kids in today's world. As I said, most parents that we surveyed said that compared to when they're growing up, It is harder to keep their teenagers safe, and it's much harder to raise teenagers of good moral character. And as you can see, perhaps reflecting that, the percentage of parents who believe it's unrealistic to prevent teens from drinking before 21 and trying marijuana is higher than the percentage of teens who think it's unrealistic to raise teens, to prevent teens from smoking cigarettes or trying other illegal drugs. The problem parents I mentioned, those who fail to monitor their kids' school night activities, that's Monday to Thursday, safeguard their prescription drugs, address the problems of drugs in school, and set good examples. First, with respect to the kids' school night activities. We asked teens, do you typically go out on school nights? You see, 46% of them said they did. Only 14% of their parents said they did. Now, either those parents don't know what's going on, or they weren't completely candid with us. We asked, if you go out, when do you come home? Well, you can see more than half of them come home between 8 and 10 p.m., and 15% of them come home after 10 p.m. Now, why is that relevant? Well, it's relevant because the kids that come home, about 30% of the kids that come home between 8 and 10 say that there's marijuana, alcohol, and other drug use among them when they're out at night. And those that come home after 10 p.m., half of those say there's marijuana, alcohol, and other drug use going on among them while they're hanging out. Where do they hang out, we asked them. Well, most of them hang out at their friend's house. The next largest place are public places. Interestingly, there's not much of a difference. There is a difference, but not much, if your kid is hanging out at their friend's house rather than a public place. There's still a very high likelihood of drug and alcohol use. Then parents who fail to safeguard prescription drugs. We asked teens, do you have friends and classmates who abuse prescription drugs? And as you can see, this has stayed pretty steady since 2003, and at about a quarter of the teens. When you look at it by age, you see a tremendous, significant spike up among 17-year-olds. Almost half of them have friends. And we ask kids who abuse, where do you get the prescription drugs? Where do kids get prescription drugs to abuse? And as you can see, a third said parents in the home. Then almost a third said friends. We think it's fair to assume that a third of those friends are in turn getting their drugs from parents or homes. That means that somewhere around 45% of the prescription drugs that are abused by teens, those teens are getting from parents and homes. And those parents that aren't paying attention to what's happening to their OxyContin and their Vicodin and their other drugs have become passive pushers, allowing their kids to have easy access to those drugs. And we all know we've seen a tremendous increase in prescription drug abuse and, sadly, prescription drug overdose deaths in recent years. The most popular prescription drugs, by far, painkillers, and in a distant second, stimulants. Then there are parents who fail to address the problem of drugs in school. Almost all parents say it's important that their teen school be drug-free, as you can see. But when we ask them whether they think their kid's school is drug-free, 42% of parents say they don't think their kid's school is drug-free. And most disturbing, of those parents that don't think their kid's school is drug-free, about 40% say to have a drug-free school is unrealistic for their kid. And there's another group of parents that are troubling. Two-thirds of parents realize that a school with drugs, where drugs are present, makes drug use more likely. But a third of parents don't think that it makes drug use more likely. But here are the facts. kids in with schools where drugs are used, kept, and sold are three times likely to get drunk in a month. They're three times likely to smoke pot. They're twice as likely to use cigarettes. They're twice as likely to use alcohol. And the problem here is, you think about it, states require children to go to school, to high school. There are state laws that require. Why should parents tolerate a situation in which the state is requiring their kids to go to a place that the state is running that is riddled with drugs and makes drug use much, much more likely? As I mentioned in the statement, parents raise hell when there's asbestos in a school. They won't send their kids till all the dust is out. We've got to get parents raising hell about the fact that they're required to send their kids to a state school that is drug infected. And as you can see here, about 21%, a big increase, a big decrease from last year, of middle schools where drugs are used, kept, and sold. That's relatively good news. On the other hand, we still have a situation in which 6 out of 10 kids returning to high school this September will be returning to schools where drugs are used, kept, and sold. And then there are the parents who fail to set a good example. 25% of the 12 to 17-year-olds say they know a parent of a classmate or friend who smokes marijuana, and 10% say they know a parent of a friend who uses marijuana with teens their own age. These parents, obviously, their example is unconscionable, and as I said, particularly parents who smoke marijuana with 12 to 17-year-olds are child abusers. Then there are other parents who are not smoking marijuana, but once did. And we ask kids, do you know if your parents used to smoke marijuana? And as you can see, a significant percentage of them, particularly 15, 16, and 17-year-olds, said they did. Their parents either told them or they guessed that. Now, here the issue is how the parents deal with that. We know, as is the case with cigarettes today, we know a lot more about marijuana today than we knew 30 years ago. In the last couple of years, the brain imaging that's been done by Nora Volkoff and others at the National Institute of Drug Abuse show how marijuana affects the developing brain. We know that it affects ability to concentrate. We know that it affects short-term memory. We know that we've known for some time that it affects motor skills. I mean, marijuana is second only to alcohol in terms of traffic accidents and fatalities where substance use is involved. And we know that the marijuana of today is much, much stronger than the marijuana of the 1970s. So if those parents explain to their kids their past use of marijuana in the context of the items I mentioned, this can be a very good experience for those kids, just as I smoked a lot and fortunately got my kids not to smoke. Do parents understand the challenges, the real world their kids are in? Well, ever since we've been doing the survey for 13 years, teens have named drugs as their top concern. Ever since we've been doing the survey, parents, a much smaller percentage of parents names drugs as their top concern. You can see here, 28% versus 17%. We did not expect this, but we always ask some questions about the availability of prescription drugs and marijuana, and we found a significant increase in availability. Each year we ask which is easiest for someone your age to buy, and as you can see here, a tremendous spike up in the prescription drugs, going from 13% of kids saying it was easiest to buy a year ago to 19% this year. That's a 46% increase in teens who can buy who find prescription drugs easiest to buy. And for the first time, and since we've been taking this survey, more teens find prescription drugs easiest to buy than find beer easiest to buy. You can see also a significant increase in the percentage of teens who find marijuana easiest to buy. And each year we say, if you want to buy marijuana right now, how long would it take you to get it? And as you can see here, 23% of 12 to 17-year-olds can get it in an hour or less. And if you add to them those who can get it in a few hours or within a day, we have 42% of teens who can get marijuana within a day or less. Those are increases from last year. You can see going from 17 to 23% in an hour or less and 37 to 42% in a day or less from 2007 to 2008. And what does that translate into? Well, big percentage increases. But if you look at the bottom part of that slide, it means that 1.4 million more teens can buy marijuana in an hour or less in this year than last year. And 1.1 million can buy it in a day or less this year than last year. It means that almost 11 million 12 to 17-year-olds in this country can get their hands on marijuana in a day or less. And as I said, it's even more disturbing because the population of 12 to 17-year-olds is 500,000 smaller this year than it was last year. This struck us, we broke it down by age this year, and as you'll see, two-thirds of 16 and 17-year-olds can get marijuana in a day or less. And we asked kids which is more common among people your age. And you'll notice on the right-hand side of that slide, half of 16 and 17-year-olds say that smoking marijuana is more common than smoking nicotine cigarettes. And since availability is indeed the mother of use, we are concerned that this will presage some increases in marijuana use. We asked teens, do you think parties are more fun with marijuana? And 18% of 17-year-olds said they did think they were more fun. We asked a couple of questions about teens and alcohol this year. We asked about the alcoholic beverage they preferred, and you can see that the largest proportion, 29% of 12 to 17-year-olds, like their liquor mixed with something sweet, like a cola or fruit juice. The alcohol industry certainly understands this when you think about all the Alka-Pops and the sweetened stuff that they're trying to sell to kids. And next in line, beer and wine. There's no difference between boys and girls in terms of liking liquor mixed with something sweet as their favorite drink, but girls certainly prefer wine in this age group, and boys prefer beer. We asked teens to agree that parties are more fun with alcohol, and as you can see, a much larger number of teens think that parties are more fun with alcohol than with respect to marijuana at much earlier ages, at every age, 14, 15, 16, and 17, there's a big difference between alcohol and marijuana. Other notable findings, as has happened in all our prior surveys, kids who attend religious services weekly are much less likely to smoke marijuana, to smoke cigarettes, and to use alcohol. This, we think, also is a reflection of parental engagement because it's likely that kids that are going, 12 to 17-year-olds that are going to church every week are going there with their parents. And again, frequent family dinners. We're holding steady at about 60%. We'd like to see that percentage go up because there's no question, since 1996, consistently our surveys have shown that the more often kids have dinner with their parents, the less likely they are to drink, as you can see here, to smoke or to use marijuana. And that, I should mention, is why we created something called Family Day, a day to eat dinner with your children, the fourth Monday in September. This is our sixth Family Day. Lauren, do you remember? Seventh Family Day. It's like the Great American Smoker. It's to try to remind parents this is important. and do it. And this year, the president, every governor, and more than 800 cities and counties will proclaim Family Day. A lot of dioceses, religious organizations, the PTA are all getting into it. We have a website, as you can see up there. We urge you to join in the Family Day celebration. And that's it, and I'm happy to take your questions. Wow. Okay. Yes, yeah.
Every year, this is a very helpful report for those of us who are in the advocacy field trying to get decision makers to understand how important this issue is. So I just want to say thank you as one of the advocates out there.
Thank you, sis. Thank you. Okay, thank you all very much.